Welcome to Not Work, Myth, and Storytelling. This is the show where ancestral wisdom meets the modern imagination. I'm your host and lead storyteller, Marisa Gowdy. I'm a myth worker, a story healer, and a writing coach. I'm the author of The Sovereignty Knot, A Woman's Way to Freedom, Power, Love, and Magic, and the founder of the Writer's Knot and Author's Knot communities. On Knot Work, we explore the mythology and folklore of Ireland and beyond. Whether you're drawn to Celtic culture and the power of the landscape, or whether you just like a good story and expansive conversation, you're in the right place. Fáilte. If you love what you hear and want to support the show, I'd be so grateful if you'd become a paid subscriber to my Myth is Medicine newsletter over on Substack. Look for the link at the top of the show notes or visit mythismedicine.substack.com. Season 6, Episode 41, Spinning the Bridget's Cross with Natalie O'Shea. As the old hymn says, Goem molta brige, Unwin le heren, Unwin le gach tir I, Molemish goler I. My Irish is certainly imperfect, but what I offer to you is this. I proclaim the praises of Bridget. She is dear to Ireland. She is dear to every country. Let us all join in her praises. Now, these lines feel like the ideal introduction to a conversation between two American-born women who lead creative lives rooted in Irish culture. Neither of us were raised in the tradition. Our families were both generations removed from the Irish homeland, and in many ways, we discovered Irish culture on our own. I'm excited to introduce you to Natalie O'Shea, who is the executive director of the Celtic Junction Art Center in St. Paul, Minnesota. Before we dive into our conversation, I want to mention a class that Celtic Junction has invited me to offer this winter online. It's called Bridget and Expressions of the Irish Divine Feminine. In this 3-session course, which begins January 28th, we'll explore how Bridget, both goddess and saint, has been an essential part of Ireland's faith and culture for millennia. Bridget's name can be translated as the Exalted One, and she was traditionally celebrated on the Festival of Imbolc. Over recent years, her festival has come to be an exaltation of Irish women and Irishness in general, particularly since Bridget's Day became a national holiday in Ireland in 2023. I offer this class as a storyteller, as a women's community leader, and as an Irish studies scholar, and will blend the mythology, hagiography, and folklore of Bridget into our time together. This series of classes will invite you to explore the historical, the spiritual, and the ecological as we immerse ourselves in the lore of Bridget and other divine feminine figures from the Irish tradition. You can find the link to register in the show notes or look under the classes tab at CelticJunction.org. And now, my conversation with Natalie as part of our Culture Makers and Myth Workers series. In addition to being the founder and executive director of the Celtic Junction Art Center of Minnesota, Natalie is an officer of the Ireland Network Minnesota and a member of the National Irish Cultural Centers of North America, representing her region nationally and internationally. She's an actor, speaker, and writer-director of 3 annual productions with an international resume of theater work. Natalie's honors are too numerous to name here, but here's a sample. She's an advisory editor for the University of St. Thomas's New Hibernia Review, and she contributes regularly to the Irish Echo and Irish Central, and was named one of the Irish Echo's Arts and Culture Heroes in 2020, as a Rebuilder of Irish America in 2021 and 2022, and was honored as an Ambassador of Irish Culture in 2025. She toured the world for 3.5 years with Riverdance, the show. That's where she met her Dubliner husband, Cormac O'Shea. With him, she moved to Ireland and eventually back to Minnesota. An additional note that feels so necessary as I hear myself say back to Minnesota, and because Natalie talks at length about the power of land and place and how she's so conscious of living at the convergence of the Minnesota and Mississippi rivers. It's a place that's so rich with indigenous history and knowledge, and it's a huge center of modern community and culture. And right now, that place is under siege. Natalie and I recorded the conversation you're about to hear on Wednesday, January 7th. In fact, I think Natalie would have emerged from the recording studio to hear the terrible news. Renee Good, a poet, a mother, a wife, an American citizen, was fatally shot by an Immigration and Customs agent while filming the activities of ICE. As Renee's widow, Becca Good, said in a tribute to her wife, "On Wednesday, January 7th, we stopped to support our neighbors. We had whistles. They had guns." I've since heard from Natalie, and she has shared how difficult this time has been in the Twin Cities. There's a sense of helplessness, of feeling like it all hits so close to home, even a week later. Natalie tells me that every person she knows has been somehow affected by this tragedy and by its aftermath. As a community organization, Celtic Junction is doing what they can in this confusing, harrowing time. In addition to starting a food drive, their upcoming events have been converted into fundraisers, supporting housing, food, and clothing for those affected by the federal occupation of Minnesota. They're doing all they can to make their cultural center a safe place for all who seek connection, reflection, and community. Well, I am so excited to welcome Natalie to the podcast today as part of our Mythworkers and Culture Makers series. And what I'm really excited to do is dive in with Natalie at this time of Bridget, as we're entering into the Imbolc season, to weave in these ideas of the divine feminine, of Bridget particularly, but also really to explore the ways in which Irish culture, Irish mythology are part of your everyday work and part of the wonderful work you're doing in the world. So welcome. I'm so glad you're here. Thanks for being here. Fáilte.
Thank you so much, Marisa. I'm delighted to be here.
Yeah. So bring us in. You know, we're speaking right now as you and I are talking on Zoom. It says Celtic Junction Library rather than your name on our Zoom screens. And knowing that Celtic Junction itself is represented by the Bridget's Cross, and we're right here at this moment in January. Can we start there with the significance of Bridget for you and of that symbol in terms of your work and what you do?
Absolutely. I think the first thing that I would say is we start with that oral tradition of always honoring where things came from. Mm-hmm. And it's not a symbol that I found alone. Mm-hmm. And that is the most important thing here. This is built by and for community. There's a lovely gentleman by the name of Dahi Sproul, who is an Irish speaker. He's a native of Derry and a very dear friend. Fantabulous. That's my word. I'm going to go with it. And he and a few others were our kind of brain trust as we were dreaming up this vision of how do we raise our children with a deep understanding of Irish culture in the middle of the Midwest prairies of the United States, you know, and it's not New York or Boston or Chicago or, you know, any of the stalwart places. And we ended up looking for buildings that would house dance, that would house music, that would house concerts. And everywhere we looked was at railroad crossings, which we found very curious. Now, Dahi and a few others may have also said, "I don't know why you're doing this." In 2008 and 2009, of course, during the economic crisis, you are crazy. It might not work, but what a wonderful idea. If you do that, you should definitely use the Bridget's Cross. It's a much underutilized and misunderstood symbol. And with him as our resident sage, I like to call him, we took that and ran with it. And what's so funny is I'm an Irish American 4 and 5 generations out with Noonan, Nugent, Finnegan, Foley in my background, and no Irish culture. None. When I married it, I had to start exploring it. And it's been such a gift to look back and to wonder how we drift so far from our roots. And when going back to them, whatever mix of them they are, because I'm more than Irish, of course, as a Scandinavian Midwest prairie mix person, that these roots started to very much speak to me. And so what Dahi brought me was actually this incredible teaching moment. Sitting with the symbol of the Bridget's Cross in my life, in my business, and in my family, it actually teaches me something all the time. And I could almost get emotional here because it's so deeply humbling to understand the different elements that a symbol holds. And when it's of a mythological level, mm-hmm. you can see it and think you understand it. And then you sit with it and you go, oh, I understand a new level. Yeah. And that's still not the end. And it never yeah. is. And you will actually never know everything there is to know. But it's with me always from its earliest elements, you know, these four directions. You could think of the four core elements of earth, air, fire, water. You could think of north, south, east, west. Then you could go indigenous above and below as well. It's not supposed to be a stagnant symbol. Mm-hmm. It's a symbol that moves. It's breath in, breath out. It's time ending and it's time beginning. It's always moving forward and it's teaching me every day.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you for taking us in through that particular portal. You know, I think that there's something to be said just for lingering in a moment, this idea of entering into relationship with a symbol in the sense that it's we've turned them into logos and flattened them down in our modern culture. But we know that this idea of what we've gotten past from the ancestors, from the ancients whose languages we couldn't possibly understand, whether we're thinking about, you know, the spirals at Newgrange or whatever those initial intentions were when those first Bridget's crosses were woven from the rushes however many centuries ago. You really just sort of take us into that precognitive sense. You know, we could really think about a symbol, but it's more than thinking about it. It really seems to be that sense of embodying it and being in relationship with it, which from what I know of your work and as you're gathering so many people together, so many different expressions of the arts and of the intellect from the you know, Irish cultural world, you're really bringing so much together in one place that seems to embody that.
That's, again, another humbling part of the symbol. Because it's made of something that's not worth anything.
Mm-hmm.
Like straws, rushes. Mm-hmm. And yet coming together, they create something that is greater than the sum of its parts. And that is, I believe, very much our symbol of community.
Mm-hmm.
And teaches me constantly that we strengthen each other. And we all have the same core, even though we may have different vectors. We may stretch out different directions. Mm-hmm. We are never separate, you know, separation is an illusion. And it's a perfect symbol to really sit and live with that and to know that we live in connection, we live in concert, we live in support of each other, we make each other stronger. We're all part of this great movement as we individually breathe in and breathe out with the symbol. I almost see it, you know, if you put the two symbols together, my two favorite ones, the Bridget's cross and the Newgrange spiral, and imagine that cross spinning like a wheel of the sun,
mm-hmm.
movement, breath in and breath out. And yet it's making that journey through the parts of the spiral as it's going. It's an incredible reflection of our universe, our star systems, of how things move in a really beautiful divine dance with each other. And yet we are never going back to the same place again. We're revisiting. But we move in circles, we move in cycles, and they work together so beautifully in community. We are here on this earth at the same time together. And I think it's so essential to hold that contradiction of our own deep work, our own sovereignty, of course, as you often have used that the language in the most positive and beautiful of its ways. And yet that comes with a responsibility of recognizing who we're traveling through this life with and all of the other people that touch base there. And it's humbling and it's beautiful and it's contradictory. And there we go, right back to the same dualities.
Yes, yes. Well, inspired by what you're saying, but perhaps toss in another sense of dualities in the sense of understanding that symbols are inherently so portable, right? We can take them into our minds and travel with them. We can wear them around our necks. We can weave them and carry them with us. We know that the spirals of Newgrange are very much in one particular place. Once you've seen them once, you kind of, they imprint upon your heart and you carry them with you. But I'd love to just sit with you in this idea of of the power and importance of place, and also the way in which you were kind of calling that in, as you named at the beginning, what it means to have created a place called Celtic Junction right in the middle of America, in the middle of Turtle Island, and that sense of creating a sense of placeness and a center where people are coming and gathering together, and then yet to be so rooted in a place that I would assume for you, it's what, 5,000 miles away from the island of Ireland, right? Like, how does that feel for you?
Change. Well, yeah. We're having a lot of these dialogues where, you know, I wasn't somebody that made the choice to leave any of the places my ancestors came from. And yet I'm here born Rugi May Ansho Ibidote. And that's the Irish language. I was born here in Bidote, which is the indigenous language here of the Dakota people. Mm. Bidote meaning a confluence. And I actually live literally just a stone's throw from the sacred place of the Dakota people, which is the convergence of the Minnesota and the Mississippi rivers, right at the mouth of St. Paul, where I was, you know, where I've been born and raised. And that sits with me every day. And it's, they're part of their creation story. And even knowing that what we're doing here is exploring ancestral and cultural roots, trying to dive deep into indigenous wisdoms to really feel where the truths are as they come out into, you know, cultural elements, whether it be language, dance, or music, or literature, or poetry, or song. They're all different, deeply spiritual expressions of our own ancient wisdoms from our ancestors. And to be doing that in a place where we are settler colonialists, trying to both honor this beautiful land that we've been raised in. I have to say, I love Minnesota so much. Mm. I love St. Paul. It's the place, I can't say it correctly, but the Dakota name where the white cliffs meet the waters. And those are the cliffs of St. Paul. And to carry the beauty of that and to enjoy where we are living and the time that we are living in, it comes with great challenges. That's the symbols really, I think, help. An exciting piece that's come to me just in the last while sitting with the Bridget's Cross is if you imagine the center of it with Polaris, with the North Star. Mm-hmm. And the vector of the Big Dipper, the arm coming out and the cup coming through. And that's one of the positions that could say one of the arms of the Bridget's Cross. And if you take the four points, you know, the spring equinox, midsummer, the fall equinox, and then, of course, the solstice, that those four points in the Big Dipper, they make a Bridget's Cross.
Wow.
We share, you know, the symbols are, this isn't just an Irish thing. The symbols are deeply human. They are of great mythological power. And when I saw that in a beautiful book and in discussion with some of the Native partners that we work with here at the Celtic Junction, and it was it just knocked the wind out of me. Mm-hmm. When you suddenly see this ancient Irish symbol in the skies above, you know, Minnesota, in can name it in the Dakota language. And it was gobsmacking, right? Have you heard that word, of course? It's one of my favorite Irish colloquialisms, because it takes your breath away, your mouth drops open, and you just get this deep realization. Again, we are all connected.
Yeah. Yeah. And what you're underlining there is that deep truth, in the sense of, you know, as we do our own individual culture work and get to really dig into what, if, you know, whether we can name it by bloodlines or just by that heartfelt lineage connection, we go back far enough with the ancestors, we reach back into what becomes utterly universal. And that sense of, I mean, it's one of those, the truths of that all writers know, right? The universal is found in the specific, but it just gets proven to us again and again of that sense of, I found a specific symbol up in the sky that all people who've ever lived upon the northern part of this globe would have seen at any one point. And it comes back in to the heart level in such an intimate way, but also in that sort of infinite way that holds us all. So thank you for that.
Yeah, intimate and infinite. I love that. You know, it goes back to the center is everywhere. is from Black Elk Speaks. And it's something that's really, it's so beautiful in its teaching. I know you talk a lot about exploring the archetypical feminine, the divine feminine. And of course, that always has the masculine within it and vice versa. It's such a great element of the duality where each holds the other. They are both two and one. We are both many and we are both united. And it's an incredibly meditative symbol. And to find that here is, it's that special part of place. You know, we've chosen to anchor ourselves here and to really honor this place in Minnesota and to honor the people that kind of come into community with us. Mm-hmm. And that symbol, if I'm concerned about, you know, am I making the right decisions? Am I leading with this very special opportunity I have? Am I leading correctly? Mm-hmm. Am I keeping the community in mind? Am I using the strengths that I have and the agency that I have been given in the right way? It's that symbol that I'll sit with. It's my talisman or touchstone.
Yeah.
So that I can, try and feel are these the right decisions? So it's a nearly a daily thing for me. I walk mm-hmm. into a building where it's above the door. Mm-hmm. And I wonder, you know, different ancestors and how they may have considered it, how they made it every February, how they burnt the old one. Of course, mm-hmm. I absolutely love that because yeah. part of that spinning image of the Bridget's Cross is creation and destruction.
Right.
Yeah. Things do not stay. Change is inevitable. And we're in such an incredible period of change in 2026. The symbol gives me just a small comfort, mm-hmm. I suppose.
Yeah. And courage to really enable ourselves to hold something close and to let it go. You know, I think especially when it comes to conversations around the ancestral, there often stirs up ideas around preservation and that need to kind of hold things close because the past is elusive, you know, memory is fleeting. We're all, you know, we're looking to make a connection and not let it go. But then that sense of, but what are the real, I guess we could call them lessons, that says inherent in that sense of we craft this with our hands, we hold it close for a single year, and then we release it again and trust, you know, if we go back to these ideas of the divine feminine that the ancestors gave us of life and death and rebirth, how do you walk that talk and trust it and say, I made this last year and I could release it and have it go again? At the both the literal level of if you're out, you know, weaving your cross in January, but also at the figurative level, is its own deep challenge in these times when things are challenging, things are shaking, we tend to hold on tighter. What if there's another path?
That's one of these lessons. And we find it in the cultural arts. The lessons, of course, that come with, whether it's the Irish language or dance or music, there are some that are so ossified mm-hmm. in tradition that it actually makes it fragile.
Yeah.
And that when you let that newness come into it, you hand that generational oral tradition on and you let it go and you let that new generation take it into another decade or into another century, even into another millennia, mm-hmm. that it's constantly renewed. The dance, it comes up all the time. My husband and I have been teaching Irish dancing for 20 years with O'Shea Irish Dance. He comes from a tremendous history with Scoil Ringa Hay in Dublin, which was a 50-year-strong school, world championships, etc. Mm-hmm. And if you hold a tradition too tight, it actually there's almost a backwards movement.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the music. If you say, "Oh no, this tune has to be played this way," you stop up its breath. Mm-hmm. So the variations have to be allowed. The newness has to come. The language gets used in different ways, right. and it has to be passed on or it dies. And they're facing that as a very real challenge with the language of Irish. Yeah. With fewer, I believe, than 80,000 native speakers at this time, you know, every one of them is precious. And can it be the language? Can it be shared enough and spread enough and given enough new life that it lasts more generations than one or two or three. You know, we don't know. Mm-hmm. And we're facing that constantly, the death of culture. And yet if you give it breath and you give it life and you pass it on, it could live indefinitely. It has a forever quality. And that's, I work in the arts. I've always known I would work in the arts, and I find that beautiful. There's an ephemeral quality of it, right? Yeah. Whether it's, you know, we just finished some of our theatrical shows and you build a new thing and you welcome all these people into it. It's almost like a family for a period of time, and then you strike it and you have to let it go. Right. It will never return the same way again.
Yes.
And that's actually part of its terrible beauty.
Yeah. Oh, the ephemeral nature of opening night and closing night, and knowing that, you know, I have daughters on the stage now, and knowing I'm like, well, I will try to record it on my iPhone, but this is not even a breath of what's actually happening in the room of, you know, the music of what happens is really in that sense of being present in those fleeting moments. And then I guess as we're speaking so much in terms of a wheel of the year idea, so, you know, Bridget's Day keeps coming around. How do we celebrate again? Or how do we, you know, whether it's a, you know, another aspect of the theatrical tradition within the center, how do you return to it and renew it in any given year? And then, of course, that's led up against the bigger backdrop of how we hold on cultures, as you say, across generations.
Well, you know, you can really get so deeply serious about this. And, you know, knowledge is power. I think, you know, the more I read, the more I realize, oh, dear heavens, I will never know everything that I want to know about even one subject, never mind multiples.
Yeah.
And it's deliciously sad that there's so much to explore that we'll never actually finish. Mm-hmm. And just as a little side note, the Celtic spiral, I studied ancient Greek, Hellenic, and Koine, read a lot of ancient original texts, the New Testament, because I really wanted, I think words are very powerful. Mm-hmm. Words made the world. They were sung into being, right? Mm-hmm. And going into the ancient parts of Crete and the Palace of Knossos and seeing the spirals all over the palaces, mm-hmm. in pre-war, pre-development Greece, in true ancient Greece, when it was a place of bees and priestesses and bulls, sacred bulls, the symbols that we find there made their way up through the Mediterranean and along the coast of Europe and into Ireland. Is that the direction things went? Is this, you know, the connectivity universally of some of these symbols is so beautiful, and yet we will never know. We will never know what were the patterns that kind of brought that into us. What were the things that our ancestors, like very distant ancestors, you know, how did they hold those symbols sacred? How did they use them in their daily traditions? Was it like Asclepius, you know, with spiritual and ritual healing in the sense of the theater, in the sense of performing through spiritual mystery. Mm-hmm. And that's what draws me to theater. I think we need more ritual in our life. I think that's beautiful. Spiraling back, of course, into theater and into the arts, knowledge, reading, power. They're all very good. They're all very important. But so is creation, so that everybody who is writing and exploring within, diving into the microcosms, so that we can reflect some of the larger human macrocosms, is incredible. And remembering that not everything has to be serious and study all the time. Mm-hmm. We are actually here to play and dance with these energies through our human experience here. And people might not feel like this is a very celebratory time, mm-hmm. but dance isn't always celebratory. Dance is ritual.
Yeah.
Movement is ritual. And to find that playfulness within us, whether it's through the symbols, whether it's through writing, dancing, music, that we're here to resonate.
Mm.
deeply within ourselves and to resonate together and to find some of that joy. I actually had a dream very recently, which I will tell you if you want, and it had to do with a puka. And the puka came to remind me that things are not as scary as they seem. And that we sometimes sitting with our shadows, in our own deep shadows, can release the fear and find the play again as we come out of the shadows and into our own light and find that dance of joy. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry, that's very perhaps abstract, but it was.
Dreams are always welcome here, but you probably might want to name what a puka is. Just that's the part that we want to elucidate. Right.
Well, again, a puka is something that could be simplified. What comes to mind is there was a film called Harvey with an imaginary rabbit, and a puka is a shapeshifter, mm-hmm. right? And in there, I believe it was Jimmy Stewart, but Harvey the rabbit appears and teaches these deep human lessons as a shapeshifter, but as this giant rabbit. And there's great humor in all of that. And it was given as, humor. It was maybe 1950s film. I'm sorry, I don't remember. Yeah. But along with some of our ancient women mm-hmm. who were also shapeshifters, some of whom appeared as rabbits, which I find such a fascinating animal of choice for a powerful shapeshifting woman to appear in. Mm-hmm. That the puka is there to, I suppose, reflect ourselves or reflect some of our deeper memory. I mean, you may have more study on it, but I had the dream.
Yeah.
And I'm like, it was a gasp. I went, oh, it's a puka.
Right.
And I knew it was the shape-shifting mm-hmm. kind of spirit animal that came to me, and it came to teach me to find the joy.
Yeah. And I think there's so much in the hair as being what the witches would often change into them, right? And whether that's across the Scottish tradition, but deeply in the Irish, like there was that sense of, yes, they are prey animals. They are fragile in their way, but they are fast and they are so attuned and so sure of their entire environment and their adaptability to be able to move through different spaces and to survive, because the fertility of the hair itself is so remarkable, right? And so, and then there's just the inherent playfulness, right? You see hares in the field, and whether they're out boxing with one another or just the way they jump and spin and have that deep ability, well, they're dancers, right? And as you say, dancers are play. How could you dream of anything else in certain ways?
And that's right back into our spring rituals, mm-hmm. right? The rabbit is a perfect symbol. Now, I don't believe the rabbit actually features deeply in the Bridget tradition, if we want to circle back to that. But I had to share my puka. So
yes. Well, and that's the whole, this is the blessing and the challenge, right? Because as you had named before, you went from speaking of your scholarship in Greek and then moving into this sense of like, how do we keep any of our academic traditions from becoming particularly moribund and dour and very much like, okay, well, this is by the scholarly book. How do we get into moving with culture, with celebration, with making them alive within us? And I think that even especially with Bridget, now with Bridget's Day being celebrated and knowing that so many are playing with her, are working with her, are celebrating her as goddess, as saint, so many Irish women I've known over the last few years, especially who've been deeply involved in bringing Bridget's Day as a holiday in Ireland, such a common phrase is that everyone has a Bridget within them, and really seeing her as a being that shines through across centuries, across traditions, across cultural orientations, perhaps, and even just coming through people as herself, but also across a broad spectrum of appearances and aspects. So I don't think she'd kick the hare out of bed,
I'd love to hear what she could, maybe that's all sit with, and what would she like to tell me about the hare or about my puka? Bridget, the fiery arrow, Bridget, our mother goddess, Bridget, our miracle worker whose cloak spreads across the lands. There's the imagery. It's so powerful and so beautiful. And I think as we're coming out of this quiet time, the solstice season, with all of these really challenging planetary alignments, challenging happenings on Earth, that sitting with the ancient and sitting with the old and finding within our resonance of truth, playfulness, of joy, and the more genuinely we resonate deeply within ourselves in whatever helps us do that, whether it's symbols or mythological figures, whether it's coming into community or whether it's dance or music together. I think it's our job to find our truest resonance right now. And the other thing that I know to be true, when we resonate deeply, it becomes amplified and reflected by others. Mm-hmm. That takes us right back to the cross, the Bridget's cross, in that we are always connected, but not attached. Mm-hmm. And we have our own work to do. We have our own resonance to do. And yet what we do amplifies the other. And that is sacred, powerful work.
Yes. The Irish word that comes to mind, you say that, is dawn, which is connected to poetry, but it's also really about that sense of living the soul's purpose and soul's expression. And whenever I hear that word, I always have a sense that it is greater than the individual. You know, it is more than just, hey, go find your patch of sunshine on the beach and shine in it. It's more instead saying, what is your, as you were saying, what's your deepest connection, and how can it be your expression in the world to allow it to ripple forth and to be shared?
Absolutely. As we are interwoven, we'll make our vectors and we'll go, shine our brightest path.
Interwoven, fitcha fuitcha. Well, it's been such a treat to sit down with you today, Natalie, and weave together so much. I'm so grateful for your being on the show today, for the work that you're doing, for the depth and breadth of this conversation. That image of that spiraling Bridget's cross is going to be with me for a long time. Thank you.
Thank you, Marissa.
Thank you for tuning in to Not Work Myth and Storytelling. Please subscribe and review the show on your favorite podcast platform, and do share this episode with other lovers of mythology and story. By the way, everyone is a lover of mythology and story, even if they've forgotten. Creating this show is a labor of love, and your support will help me continue to craft and share stories throughout this season and beyond. Please consider becoming a paid subscriber to my newsletter, Myth is Medicine, over on Substack, where you'll find new writing and conversations each week. You can find out more about my writing, my book, our online writing communities, as well as how to work with me as a writing coach at marissagowdy.com. Gratefully, I live, write, work, and record this podcast on the ancestral lands of the Munsee Lenape tribe, whose name means original people. Music on this show is performed by Beth Sweeney and Billy Hardy.